Morning. Mutual versus USA. Ms. Allen?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Nicole Allen, and I represent the appellant, Joseph Bushell. The district court made two errors in this case. The first was a legal error that the court committed when it limited Bushell's claim to Hansen or conditions in the prison laundry. Bushell didn't mention the prison laundry in any of his administrative complaint forms. He mentioned Hansen by name only in one out of four forms, but also made other statements that indicated his claim was broader than Hansen. In the very first sentence of Bushell's pro se complaint, he articulated his claim as, quote, defendants, medical and executive departmental employees are intentionally disregarding basic mandatory medical biohazard containment quarantine and decontamination procedures of infectious diseases. End quote.
Well, that's kind of a general statement. That means how everybody is treated.
Yes.
And so it's not focused on Hansen and handing tools and maybe the laundry wasn't cleaned in hot enough water.
Correct. He didn't.
So you get to a much bigger picture here about just a institutional negligence.
Yes, Your Honor. And as a pro se litigant in particular, Bushell's administrative complaint forms and his pro se complaint are entitled to a generous construction. The United States was on notice of any type of claim implicit in the facts that he set forth. And Bushell's position regarding the scope of his claim hasn't changed throughout this litigation. He filed his pro se complaint in 2008. In 2009, counsel was appointed for him. Appointed counsel propounded discovery requests on the United States seeking information related to all MRSA-infected inmates and inmates infected with staph.
Proceed on the focus on the laundry issue only, though?
No, sir. Counsel sought information about all MRSA-infected inmates.
Yeah, I know he sought information, but as far as pursuing the claim, it focused on the laundry issue, right?
No, we focused on the general negligence of the institution. Our claim has always been, since day one, that...
Well, how did we get to trial and only talk about the laundry then?
Well, we didn't only talk about the laundry in the trial. We talked about the majority of the testimony.
I mean, I know you talked about general things, but the focus was on the laundry, right?
No, Your Honor, it really wasn't.
The
district court focused on the laundry in his opinion. Neither party even argued that Bushell's claim was limited to the laundry. The district court made a ruling on September 13th, 2012. This case had been going on since 2008. The United States had never asserted that the laundry was the issue in the case, nor had we. We'd been pursuing discovery of the BOP's and FCI Greenville's infection control policies generally and how they applied to all prisoners in the prison, not just Bushell. The laundry was interjected by the district court.
Was he bringing this on behalf of all prisoners, or was he bringing it on his own behalf? I mean,
Mr. Bushell's bringing
this claim.
Would
you explain why Judge Gilbert focused on the laundry, right?
Well, Mr. Bushell's bringing this claim on his own behalf. But the way FCI Greenville was executing the policies, the BOP policies and its own policies, or in this case, failing to implement those policies,
impacted
Bushell.
I understand that. They didn't do things they were supposed to do. But the focus with regard to the harm to your client was what happened in the laundry, right?
The focus on what happened to our client, we believe, could have been caused by several factors.
I thought your position is sort of comparable to, let's imagine a pedestrian hit by a car at night. Turns out the driver was texting and speeding and had his lights off. I mean, you've got evidence that the FCI was failing to comply with a number of different policies for managing infected inmates, right?
Yes.
And it's not easy to tell exactly which path any particular disease agent might have followed to your client.
Yes, that's exactly correct.
There's a lot of focus. I frankly think that the focus on Mr. Hansen may have wound up confusing the issue more than clarifying it. But I understood your position to be, in essence, that if we can show negligence in failing to comply with MRSA management standards, which are intended to prevent the kind of harm that your client suffered, that you have a viable claim.
That's exactly right. And, you know, the United States has no defense to that position. The United States concedes that Bushell could have gotten MRSA from, you know, persons that he lived with.
Well, you're not trying to hold the prison to a standard of being a guarantor of good health, are you?
No, absolutely
not. Some infections are going to happen despite reasonable precautions, right?
Yes. But in this case, there was substantial evidence that the reasonable precautions that had been, you know, adopted by the BOP and FCI Greenville were not being implemented.
Well, let's follow up a little bit, just to use Judge Hamilton's hypothetical. If it's the middle of the night and somebody gets hit in the dark, and it turns out the person to get hit just walked out in the middle of the street and got in the way of otherwise right-of-way traffic. Because it seems to me, Dr. Dottie said this guy had the worst hygiene habits in the prison. Now, maybe that's an exaggeration. This guy didn't do anything preventive on his own, according to Dr. Dottie.
I think, Your Honor, that perhaps you're remembering Ms. Bowen's testimony.
I don't know. I thought it was Dr. Dottie. He was the prison medical director.
Yes, the prison medical director. Dr. Dottie said that he recalled Bushell not looking very good when he saw him after his return from the hospital, and I think he made a very general statement about Bushell's hygiene.
What was that general statement?
That it was not the best.
No.
Somebody said worse than most.
That was Ms. Bowen.
Okay.
Ms. Bowen also couldn't give any specifics. When she was directly asked about Mr. Bushell's hygiene during the time period in question, she had no response.
Well, he didn't
she
show
had no
up
foundation
some,
for her testimony.
I'm sorry. He didn't show up for some treatment because it wasn't convenient or it was far away or something.
That was Mr. Hansen.
That's right. He's right. Well, that's where you get attached to Mr. Hansen. Maybe he got too close to Mr. Hansen, who wouldn't bother to go get treated.
Right. So Mr. Hansen has a long history of staph infection. He's not being cultured. He's not taking his medicine. He's not covering his wounds. He's got draining wounds, and he's moving around the prison unrestricted.
Well, I know that you're trying to separate yourself from Mr. Hansen, but that seemed to me was a big focus on Mr. Hansen, who was not doing it all, whatever one should do in prison. It's not a pleasant place, I'm sure, and there are many things. I mean, I would be hesitant to even go through the food line. But
you certainly would in this prison because there are MRSA-positive inmates working in the food line.
But this is a problem in prison, and one thing you have to be very diligent in taking care of yourself. Obviously, when he's out of prison, he has all these very serious problems.
Well, there are certain things you can't avoid. There's no way to avoid the food line. You've got to eat. Mm-hmm. You have to work. You're required to work, actually, by FCI Greenville policy unless you're restricted from doing so.
Okay.
So there are certain, you know, things that you just can't do to protect yourself.
That's why he got so focused on Hansen, because he was handing tools back and forth and supposedly has an open sore. That's why maybe you can call it a big distraction. What we got here.
Part of it, Your Honor, is that in its very late-dated ruling, the district court focused us on Hansen. I mean, the district court said, oh, this is Hansen or the laundry.
To look at, because that was the only, I have to use the word tangible, that they had, other than just as general allegations what a lousy place it was to live. And they weren't doing things right, which may be the case. That's what bothers me, is just this expansive, it's almost like class action. You say, well, there are 49 other people, and they all should be somehow or other compensated.
Well, we're not saying that those 49 people should be compensated. We're saying Mr. Bushell should be compensated based on the specific facts of his case.
Of the results of what is his experience in prison.
What we're also saying is that the United States shouldn't be able to use its own negligence as a defense. I mean, what the United States is saying is, we were so negligent in the way that we were administering our MRSA policies that you can't point out the specific instance of negligence that caused you to get MRSA. And that shouldn't be allowed. That's not the law in Illinois.
On the scope of claim issue, is what troubles me most on your side of the case is the fact that we don't have an amended complaint. We've got this pro se complaint that, you know, you quoted the part that's best for you all, and then it proceeds immediately to say it was Hansen when he gave me the tools, right, back and forth. Given the pretty broad discretion that this court ordinarily gives district judges in managing cases, why should we not treat that September 13th ruling about the scope of the case as something within the district court's case management discretion?
Well,
that's much better said than I asked the question in the first place.
I agree with you, Your Honor, that there are statements in the pro se complaint that can be taken both ways. But as this case progressed, this issue was actually briefed in front of the magistrate judge in the context of two discovery motions.
But the magistrate's rulings made clear he was talking about purposes of discovery and was not committing to the scope of the case more generally, right?
Well, actually, the magistrate issued two decisions on the same day. In one decision, he granted us discovery of the policies from 2005 till 2007, understanding that we were really focused on 2006, because that's when Bushell was there and got sick. And when he made that ruling, he said, I'm giving you latitude because discovery is broad, and I'm not, you know, doing this to broaden the scope of your claim in any way, and I'm not saying that information from all these years would be admissible under the rules of evidence. On the same day, he issued another ruling where he disclosed to us, or, you know, ordered that it should be disclosed to us, the names and housing records, work records of all MRSA-positive inmates at FCI Greenville, and notably, he didn't make those statements about the scope of the claim. He said, you know, this is relevant to your claim, and so you're entitled to this information. So I think it's placing too much weight on the particular sentence about admissibility, because that came up in a different context. What he was referring to was information from 2005 to 2007 and how that might be relevant to the litigation.
This is, I mean, given this is federal court, you didn't submit proposed findings of fact and so forth in this case, did you?
We did after the trial to the district court. Yes, we did.
And
the same argument there that we're making here.
That was my point. That was my point. But the district judge did have it before him that you were making that broader claim, and he narrowed it down in his decision.
He absolutely did. And there were also, you know, we presented evidence during trial. The United States objected and said, you know, this isn't within the scope of the claim. We said that it should be. I mean, he parsed that out during the trial as well. I mean, he was well aware of our position versus their position. There was extensive briefing before the trial, in fact, on the scope of the claim.
So you knew that what you had possibly had to overcome was the fact that he was focusing on the laundry room rather than the broad.
Right. So we attempted a trial to do both.
The plaintiff is ordinarily treated as the master of his own complaint, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Which is why we attempted to do both. I mean, we attempted to respond to his concerns about wanting information about the laundry in Hansen, but we also made every effort and got in evidence regarding other inmates. Dr. Greifinger testified extensively.
It started out as a pro se complaint. That's where part of the problem comes in, is getting back to Judge Hamilton phrased it, in which I inarticulately tried to phrase it. You really didn't narrow down to this broader claim. We were looking at an individual. It's not a class action. You're looking at this individual and how he got injured.
Right. We're looking at this individual, how he got injured, and our position is that he was injured because of a
policy,
failure to follow policies.
Okay.
And that's enough. That's enough under Illinois law. He was injured because of a failure to file the policies on a widespread basis when he was in an environment that was totally controlled by FCI Greenville.
But
he could not protect himself from that environment. He was subject to it.
While we're on that, though, you're not arguing res ipsa loquitur, are you?
We're not arguing it specifically. Our theory of causation.
Not even generally. because this is you told me earlier that this is not a situation in which the mere fact that he got sick would be enough to establish your case.
Right.
So res ipsa loquitur is not really a part of this case. Would you agree that if we send this case back for remand for a new trial, that the government would be perfectly free to raise the kind of the to use my parallel, the pedestrian stepped out into the roadway or failed to use proper hygiene himself? That would all be fair game as part of the dispute.
That would be fair game. Mm-hmm. But there really isn't a lot of evidence of that in the record.
Well, not yet. But
that would be fair game.
I mean, I thought you were asking us to just go ahead and reverse and enter judgment for the plaintiff, which I really can't imagine doing. Under these circumstances, you think a new trial would be appropriate and both sides could put on additional evidence.
That would be appropriate.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that Judge Gilbert would be glad to have this case back.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Hudson?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Counsel. I'm Jennifer Hudson, Assistant United States Attorney, Southern District of Illinois. Counsel for Mr. Buchel asked, and in your opinion, did Mr. Buchel contract MRSA from Mr. Hansen and not one of the other 41 inmates who had MRSA? And Dr. Greifinger, the expert, said, I just think he had more contact with Mr. Hansen. The evidence that Buchel placed in front of the trial court was that Mr. Buchel contracted MRSA from Hansen. It was beaten into the ground after witness after witness after witness that Mr. Buchel contracted MRSA from Mr. Hansen. And the proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law are at document 160, first turning to page 28.
These are plaintiff's proposed findings?
They are.
Okay.
Starting at paragraphs 93 and continuing onward, plaintiff suggests that negligence started because of Greenville's failure to segregate any inmate, specifically Mr. Hansen. And I will read for the court that health service personnel documented that Mr. Hansen had multiple wounds on his face, neck, back, arms, and legs, some of which were draining and others contained fluid so that they would begin to drain.
That was from the cellmate, right?
No, it's not his cellmate.
No, I'm talking about Hansen's cellmate.
No.
Somebody who testified to or brought that up, that he had all these sores all over him.
Mr. Hansen wasn't Mr. Buchel's cellmate. That was somebody who worked.
I know that. I've said who said that he had all these sores all over him?
From documents in health services. Over the course of approximately 1 year, he had all of these different wounds on him.
Okay, so somebody didn't see this other than documents from, I assume, a medical staff or somebody.
Correct.
Okay, so it was the only encounter, a known encounter with Mr. Hansen when the tool exchange on that one day?
Yes. And frankly, if you take a look at the record and you stop it before you get to Mike Spoto, who is the head of the maintenance department, and you turn backward and look at it, it's very clear that Mr. Buchel led counsel to believe that he and Hansen worked together. Period. That they were work partners. And this wasn't just a simple one-day work assignment. Because if you look at Greifinger, look at his report, look at his testimony, he says, I think he had more contact with Mr. Hansen than the other 41 inmates, than any other place that he could have obtained MRSA. It's clear that Mr. Buchel caused counsel to believe that they worked together. Then enter Mr. Spoto, who was the foreman. And the foreman said, uh-uh, I worked with inmate Hansen, the guy who had the lumps and the bumps on him. I pat searched him. daily. I worked with him daily. I handed tools back and forth with him daily. I never saw anything oozing from him daily.
But he did, Spoda also said that Michelle was there one day. Did he?
No.
Did he know that or not
no,
know that?
He did not.
So he wasn't there the day that Michelle was there.
He said it was a possibility, but he never saw it happen. It was possible.
And what did Michelle have to say about how often he encountered Hansen?
Mr. Buchel testified about the one incident.
One day. And that day was...
Apparently the magic day.
The day after Hansen got released from something or other, he was put in one place, but apparently he was out of some kind of medical custody, I guess I'll have to describe it. Did I get that correct?
Mr. Hansen, inmate Hansen,
on that day,
had lesions on his, I believe, legs and arms on July 18th, 2006, not his face, on the day that he worked with Mr. Buchel.
But hadn't he been in some kind of a medical treatment and got out that day?
Yes.
Obviously, what I'm concerned about is this general, we'll call it scope, of the whole institution versus the encounter with Hansen, and I don't know about the laundry, but I guess what I need to hear from you is how the whole institution isn't therefore responsible just because of the way they run the show, responsible for his illness.
Well, first of all, plaintiff's appellant's brief cites specifically cases related to res ipsa loquitur, and I know this court has already asked questions, and that's
right,
not what they're trying to delve into. However, the only issue related to the entire prison facility and the manner in which it was maintained and cleaned dealt with basically two areas. One, how they did or did not follow specific manuals. And second, if you look at the testimony given by the person related to the accreditation, that accreditation, and I apologize, I've forgotten the name of the employee, but it was in the government's case in chief. There was a witness who testified regarding the Rejuvenol, the anti-MRSA, cleanser that was used throughout the facility, and also regarding the accreditation that was achieved for Greenville, and that happened during the course of this outbreak. They received a specific accreditation, meaning that they had to achieve a certain level of cleanliness, certain level of different things. That's all within the transcript and is available for the court to review. It's not just a simple, hey, we've got an outbreak here, you know, forget the inmates, let's just let them run hog wild. It's the government's position that Thelen's testimony is key. He actually shows this court what was going on in that facility. You have the medical team telling the officers and the inmates, hygiene is key. Make sure your hygiene is good. They have posters everywhere you can turn around. They have town hall meetings. They have the inmates, the individual guards closest to the inmates, telling and making the inmates go to hospital or going to medical as soon as they see anything with a dripping wound, regardless of what it is. It could be a pimple. They want a bandage on it. They want something covering it. But they have inmates who are giving illegal tattoos. They have inmates who are trying to avoid the pill line because it's inconvenient. They have inmates who aren't following the directions. In prisons, as much as Dr. Greifinger would like to quarantine everybody that's there, the inmates do have cruel and unusual punishment issues as well. And Dr. Dowdy testified about there was a discussion amongst those in authority at the prison about using SHU as a means of housing inmates who had active MRSA cases. They didn't want those inmates to see that as something that was a negative. They didn't want them to think they were being punished because they had some type of a MRSA infection. So it wasn't that the prison was doing nothing and just turning a blind eye. They were actively trying to respond to this incident as it occurred. It wasn't just a simple matter of, these are eggs, let's just toss them, we don't care. And that's not how the testimony came out, Your Honor.
But would you agree, Ms. Hudson, those were all matters that essentially were beyond the scope of what the district judge thought were at issue? That is, the segregation in housing, anything except laundry.
No, Your Honor, that's actually not what the district court said. I think if you look at my brief, I very clearly state that the district court, I apologize, I don't have the number in front of me, at the conclusion of the final pretrial hearing, there is a back and forth between the two counsel for Mr. Buchel and the district court. They asked permission to brief it. And then at the end of their brief, there is a specific request from Mr. Buchel's lawyers as to what they would like the scope of it to be. And they ask for basically laundry in general, both because Mr. Buchel worked in laundry, carrying from point A to point B, and the laundry facilities themselves, are they cleaning well enough? And as it relates to inmate Hansen and others. And the court does specifically make that ruling, and I've cited it.
Wait just a second here. I'm looking at the conclusion of their memo on this that is not at all limited to laundry or Hansen.
Right, and other inmates.
Right, but it's also not limited to laundry. And then the judge, 2 weeks later, says, The case is limited to conditions leading to possible transmission of a staph infection in the laundry facility, but not necessarily limited to Hansen.
Right.
So where does the laundry limitation come from?
The laundry limitation comes in because that's where inmate Buchel was either working or could have acquired it based upon the conditions.
I know that is one theory, and the plaintiff developed that, and we have detailed factual findings from the district court about that.
Right.
But I don't understand the basis for limiting the claim to the laundry.
I believe that has to do with what the plaintiff stated their expert was going to state.
But Greifinger was talking about a whole lot of other things besides laundry, wasn't he? He was talking about segregation. He was talking about MRSA-infected inmates working the food line, and so on. And
correct.
All that's out of the picture under the district court's approach, right?
I don't believe so. And if I could, one thing regarding the MRSA inmate and the food line, that evidence, I would like to talk about the food line. The only evidence that was presented to the court was there was one inmate whose job was kitchen PM. There's actually no evidence that there was a MRSA-positive inmate with seeping wounds that was working the food line. And Dr. Greifinger actually never testified that he could, or never pointed out any specific inmate on that line that had a seeping wound that could not be contained by a bandage. None.
Well, obviously there was also some problems in terms of the record keeping and what you guys stopped doing tests for MRSA. Right. I mean, we had these at different times.
I believe Dr. Dowdy testified about that.
There's an inmate identified on page 2 of the relevant exhibit. There's another one on page 4 who gets an order no food service until further notice, then worked the following day, among others. And a lot of others. But I guess the real question that I have is not so much to try to resolve those factual issues, but to try to understand why the district judge didn't treat those as relevant.
Well, all the information that Dr. Greifinger wanted to testify to was it testified to. It all came in.
Fine, but the district judge was treating most of it as irrelevant to the extent it didn't wasn't limited to the laundry, right?
I don't believe so, because if you look at plaintiff's proposed conclusions of law, you look at what they think is relevant, and it doesn't discuss it at all.
Well, I mean, plaintiffs face a problem where the district judge has, from their point of view, arbitrarily limited the scope of their case just before trial. Okay? And they've got to do their best to cope with that. But I'm trying to understand, I guess, really where what the basis was for that limitation. And I don't see it yet.
My understanding in looking at the back and forth between the court is there is a specific back and forth where the court asks, what is your expert going to say? And I cannot recall which counsel it was, but there was a response from one of the two counsel, from Mr. Buchel, who said, well, it's possible it comes from somebody other than Mr. Hansen. And Judge Gilbert says, possible, anything is possible. What does your evidence show? And that's when one of the two counsel respond with, Dr. Greifinger will testify, or we anticipate he will testify, that it comes from inmate Hansen. And it goes on from there. And I believe the court was trying to narrow the scope related to what plaintiffs indicated their evidence was.
But over their objections, right? Because they, in that briefing, they wanted a much broader case.
I believe that the court fashioned the case appropriately. I think it's...
Was that issue ever specifically addressed with regard to the scope, I should say, with Judge Gilbert during the trial or at the close of the trial?
No. My understanding until we received this brief is that plaintiff got everything they wanted.
I'm sorry? Say that again. I'm sorry. You thought plaintiff got everything they wanted with respect
yes,
to what?
With
the scope of the
to
claim?
Scope. Yes, we were the one who objected at trial as to the
well,
scope
of
the claim.
You kept saying that in your brief, but they kept saying, no, we're not limited to laundry.
Right, because when we went to
trial,
we wanted
them to
limited
laundry.
Just to Hansen.
Right.
And not to other inmates.
Well, let me just sort of a general question. Was there a substantial focus on the scope, or was this an issue as to this particular defendant contracting the disease?
I'm sorry, Ron.
Was there a general a discussion during the course of the trial? Was this a big issue, the scope?
No, it didn't come up at all.
The big fight was before trial, right? In the scope of the pretrial order, the final pretrial order, and the briefing that was conducted leading up to that September 13th order, right?
Correct.
That's when the dispute was raised, to
correct.
You very clearly.
Okay. Correct. And at the time that the trial started, the United States made an objection asking that it be limited to Buchel. And we lost that argument.
You lost it?
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. How much time? We'll give you a couple minutes.
I'll be very brief. We argued about the scope of the claim. We briefed it several times. We briefed it immediately before trial. At trial...
Is this before Judge Gilbert or before the magistrate?
Before Judge Gilbert. We briefed it before Judge Gilbert extensively right before trial. He issued his ruling. At trial, we sought to introduce evidence such as the chart that Your Honor was referring to that indicated other inmates and how they were not restricted in any way. During trial, the United States objected, for example, on page 203. Judge, I would object to this entire line of questioning as being irrelevant. These are questions related to that chart. Frankly, the court has entered its order saying that the scope of the claim here was limited to whether or not Bushell got MRSA from Hansen as it relates to passing tools back and forth in the laundry. We're far afield of that at this point, and frankly, I believe that is irrelevant. The court said, I'll allow a little latitude. So some of that evidence came in. But this issue was active during the trial. Judge Gilbert was aware of it. He was aware what our view of the scope of the claim was and what the United States' view of the scope of the claim was. We raised it with him at the pretrial conference, and you know, several times throughout the before trial, during trial, and after trial. We've cited in our brief to areas in our reply brief on page 9. We've got cites to the record document 160, which is the post-trial brief where we raised this issue. Again, those specific cites are included on page 9 of the reply brief. And Greifinger testified specifically to Hansen, of course, but he also testified more generally. For example, he was asked the following question. What's your opinion regarding whether the defendant followed policies related to staph infections in MRSA in 2006? Answer, well, first of all, the policies are very good. The policies that I'm familiar with, and I refreshed myself with the policies and practices and guidelines, but overall in this case, at FCI Greenville, the policies were not followed. Question, what is your opinion regarding whether the defendant's compliance with those policies affected Mr. Bushell? Answer, in my opinion, the failure to follow those policies resulted in his infection and later devastating life-threatening illness. So Greifinger's testimony, he gave some testimony that was specific to Hansen, but he gave a lot of testimony that was much broader than that and was in line with our general theory that, that our claim shouldn't be limited simply to Hansen or the laundry. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to everyone. The case be taken under advisement.